Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a man who is gay or bisexual. If you have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can feel free to either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. I'm going to bring my co-hostess for the evening on in just one moment. And Suzette, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, how are you, Suzette?
I am doing fantastic, Bonnie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great on this very cold, wintry night here in the north. And I want to say congratulations to you on now being a married woman. You know, we've been announcing this, waiting for you to come back married.
Yes.
How does it feel to be a married woman now?
It feels fantastic. I'm still on a cloud, girl.
That's wonderful. You're still in the honeymoon period, right?
Yes, I am.
And I hope that lasts for your whole marriage. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It would be. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, I think that is a good goal to go for. And you know what? I think it's a lot easier because we're older now, right?
Yeah. I think so.
So we're more realistic about what the future is going to be bringing us. And also you have less time to have to grow up because you're already grown up, which is good.
That's right.
So I think a mature wedding is always better than one when you're younger and you have no clue about what life is about. So hopefully this will be the best time of your life.
I really believe it. I honestly do believe it.
Well, I want it to be the best time of your life because you really deserve it. You're so wonderful in giving to all of us and to all our women who really do appreciate you and who are so happy about the success, you know, that you've had in your own life, not only as a new wife to a wonderful man, but also as far as your career, your writing of books. Someday you'll probably make a singing album because you have too much talent. But that's
only
okay.
Only if you do a duet with me, Bonnie. You got to do a duet.
I'd be happy
to.
Make sure you get me in on one of those duets on your album, okay?
Deal.
I need a new career. Even if I can't sing, I'll pretend. But tonight's a very monumental night for a lot of our women also, because this has been a really hectic week with all of the news going on about this new show that's airing right around now on the Learning Channel. Are you familiar with this?
No.
This has been the talk of the whole week about the Mormon men who are gay and getting married. And in fact, all the major... Yes, and the major media has all been covering it. Good Morning America, The View. You know, it's just amazing how much media has come out on this. And the response from our women in our group has been over amazingly horrified by this. And in fact, there's a petition campaign. And, you know, I've been sending out the link to the petition to people, you know, in our group. I'm going to send it out in my newsletter next week. And I'm going to take a look right now at the news, at the petition to see how many people have signed it so far. This is a petition to the Learning Channel, you know, telling them that they don't want this show airing. And so far, there is 125,139 people who have signed this petition to cancel your upcoming TV show, My Husband's Not Gay. And it says, the guy who wrote this petition, Josh Sanders, says, this January, the Learning Channel will debut My Husband's Not Gay, a TV show that promotes the false and dangerous idea that gay people can and should choose to be straight in order to be part of their faith communities. As a gay Christian man who's seen firsthand how this message can harm people, I'm calling on the Learning Channel to cancel My Husband's Not Gay, and to stop telling America that the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people should lie to themselves and to their faith communities about who they are and who they love. As a devout Christian, I understand the important role faith that plays in the lives of the show's main characters. It was made very clear to me by the conservative community I grew up in that being gay was considered unnatural and an abomination. So I, too, did everything possible to hide who I am. I was even subjected to 6 months of so-called reparative therapy, a discredited and dangerous practice that falsely claims to turn gay people straight. I was promised I could change, and I was told that I should pray the gay away. But I quickly learned the very harm of reparative therapy, a practice that's been denounced as ineffective and dangerous by nearly every major medical authority. In the end, the only thing that this so-called therapy did was stoke a growing despair that maybe my life wasn't worth living. The men featured in this show deserve to be shown compassion and acceptance. Perhaps even more importantly, TV viewers need to know the horrific consequences of trying to change who you are. Instead, the Learning Channel is presenting victims' lives as entertainment, while sending the message that being gay is something that you can and ought to be changed, and that you should reject your sexual orientation by marrying someone of the opposite sex. This message is harmful to both the LGBT people and communities of faith, and I call upon the Learning Channel to stop spreading such dangerous misinformation by canceling My Husband's Not Gay immediately. And that was the gist of the petition. And that's why I say so far over 125,000 people have signed this petition. And, you know, many of our women have signed it and going to keep passing it around. And if anybody would know the danger of that, certainly it's you, because you come from a Christian background and a Christian home. And even though it wasn't Mormon, it was similar in many ways, right?
Yeah, Pentecostal holiness, I mean, you got a lot of strictness, you got a lot of, you know, traditions and doctrines that support this erroneous thinking, you know. So
it's really twisted.
You know, funny, I didn't see, I guess I needed to come up for air because I didn't even know anything about that. But interestingly,
well, you're on your honeymoon. You're on your honeymoon, so that's perfectly acceptable. But this has been big news for, like, I guess for the last 10 days. In fact, I did a couple of radio shows this week about it. You know, they asked me to be their guest. And the sad thing is that I'm not watching the show. It's currently on. I'm not taping the show. I have no interest in this show. I'm not going to give it credibility by watching it. But the women who are married to these men know about their husbands. So it's not a hidden secret. The men are very open that they have attractions to men. But they want a loving wife and a family. So some of them, one couple's married, I think they've been average, I've been watching the promos, like for 10 years. And a couple of the others are married like 3 or 4 years. And they're having a wonderful time of it. You know, they're showing that you can have good family values. They have children. They're family units. And so their husbands have gay attractions. They're going to have to get over that, you know, if they want to keep their family. But, you know, the only good thing, and I say the only good thing, is at least they're not lying about it. You know, at least they're admitting they have gay attractions. Maybe they're not acting on it yet, but, of course, that will change in time also. Because if it doesn't change, then those really kind, lovely husbands aren't going to be kind and nice to their wives. They're going to really start hating them as they progress. You know, they're young in their 20s or 30s. By the time they hit their 40s and feel that frustration of not being able to sexually perform or wanting a man, it's going to be really tough.
There.
So, right?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad at the petition because, I mean, lives being messed up is just, even if it's, like you said, even if it's not happening now, it's a ticking time bomb.
Well, you know what, it's giving, from everything that people have been writing, it's giving a really bad message. And like here one says from another interview, well, I'm interested in men, I'm just not interested in men. This January, the Learning Channel is set to air My Husband Is Not Gay, a show that features openly gay Mormon men who date and marry women. Apply palm directly to forehead. The show features three men who are supposedly happily married to women despite being gay and one single gay dude looking for a nice woman to settle down with. The very existence of this series indicates the need to address the general bigotry surrounding a man's understanding of sexuality as a hindrance, something to overcome with faith in God, and forcing himself into a relationship with a woman to whom he's fundamentally not attracted to. The fact that the Mormon Church just reiterated its opposition to same-sex marriages in April, stating that succumbing to homosexuality is a sin, makes this even more disturbing. The trailer seems light and fun, but it's clear these men are dealing with a lot. The bachelor says, I want to marry a woman, but I don't know how to work out these feelings. Another, who is married to a woman, states, I don't think people understand us. I don't think that's true. I understand the need to deny one's true self so as to not risk utter social rejection. What I don't understand is the need to glorify the way religion can constrain people, break them down, and punish them for who they are. So, you know, there's been a lot of controversy over this, but in the aftermath of all of this, worse things have happened all this week. I want to share them with you, and then I'll ask you for your opinion on all of this.
Okay.
First, somebody sent me a column by a guy named Rick Clemens, I'm sorry, and he's out in California, and to be honest, I really thought this was a joke when I first got it, you know, and I couldn't believe it because I know Rick, and I know that, you know, we you know, in the past I've referred some people to him. I really thought we were on the same track, but we're not.
Oh.
But that's why I thought at first this was a joke, because he had it, this is from Yahoo Style. And it just seems like there's a bandwagon that we'll talk about in a little while that people are jumping on. And this says, 5 reasons having a gay husband is actually a good thing, by Rick Clements. Are gay men living heterosexual lives always a bad thing? Your husband comes out to you and says, I have something to tell you. The first panic thought that crosses your mind is, oh God, he's dying or having an affair. Both thoughts are true, but slightly off course from what really is about to happen to your marriage. You're about to kill him because he's having an affair. But it turns out, with a man, or even many men, life as you knew it just got flushed down the toilet. White picket fence dreams blacken, golden years of retirement tarnish. Thoughts of how could I ever have not seen this cause you to gasp for air. Divorce court, here you come. Or do you? Maybe, just maybe, not. It depends on the strength of your marriage and your desire to work it out. Gasp, did I just suggest that you stay in your marriage even if your husband is pounding the pool boy? No, I'm suggesting you find out what is really going on with your husband and his desires for same-sex sex. It's not exactly true that he's become the gayest blade in the neighborhood. Too often we assume that same-sex attraction definitely defines a man or woman as homosexual. Granted, the bisexual card can also get played, which simply means the person is more fluid in their sexual attractions. The real question becomes, what is it that makes your guy thinks he wants to have sex with men? Is it a closeted bromance? That's B-R-O, bromance, like brother romance. Lack of testosterone, latent femininity, desire for submission, or was it a one-time thing that just happened? In the world of sexuality and sexual exploration, there is no one right answer. If there was, then there would be no therapists, coaches, or counselors. The right answer would be published in a New York Times bestseller, and all would be right in the world of sex. Yet, here's one of life's dirty little secrets. Hundreds of thousands of normal married couples, if there is such a thing as normal, are living in mixed orientation marriages by choice. Mixed orientation marriage means one spouse is homosexual and the other is heterosexual. I know that's a jaw-dropper, but it's true. Google mixed orientation marriages, and here's what you'll find: plenty of advice and articles on how to make mixed marriages work. With a little more digging and sleuthing, you'll find out there's a whole underworld of support for both spouses, but no one is talking about it. Why? Hello, have you seen the reactions to gay marriage? Does a day go by when someone somewhere is not bully, abused, or even murdered for being gay? Under the covers of the mixed orientation marriage world is a dress rehearsal. Until we as a society accept this choice as a viable option and part of the fabric in our lives, nothing will change, and that's the problem. Nothing will change because, unfortunately, for many people, gender and sexual orientation is still a black or white concept. No room for shades of gray in this discussion. But I say, let's go to the gray conversation. So here are 5 reasons why mixed orientation marriages are worth considering. 1. Whatever works, works. Just like being gay, bisexual, transgender, polyamorous, asexual, and all the rest of the spectrum of sexuality, if it works for a couple to have a mixed orientation marriage, then let it work. It's their marriage and their relationship. How many of you would like someone getting into your bed and telling you how you should live in your marriage? That was number one. Mm. Number two, there are 2 sides to every story. Couples who find themselves in mixed orientation marriage often feel victimized and repressed. When communication is open to discussing how each partner feels, there's a higher likelihood that common ground might be found between them. Uncover the real story and you'll also uncover the real answers to what you should do in this situation. 3, determine the levels of desire. As hard as it is to have this type of conversation, it's critical to determine if it's a deep-seated sexual desire or an emotional desire. The two are mutually exclusive and mutually dependent. If a gay partner is seeking sexual satisfaction only with no emotional attachment, then sexual exploration might be a space for the couple to venture together. On the other hand, if there is emotional attachment and deeper connection to individuals of the same gender, heightened by sex, then there's a high probability you might be looking at a bisexual or gay partner. If that's the case, then the onus rests on the partner struggling with their same-sex attractions to find themselves and come clean to the spouse. Does wanting gay sex, number four, mean that they're gay? Oh, not necessarily. Sexual desires require many different paths in order for full satisfaction. It's no different from the desire from the missionary position versus doggy style. One may desire a same-sex tryst from time to time to satisfy their sexual energy. Provided the couple has open communication about their sexual requirements, then all that's left to do is make it work. And number five, what's sex got to do with it? As a society, we've become very sexually hung up. Sex is either a tool for procreation, a recreational sport, or a deviant behavior. Yet there seems to be no room for sex just isn't my cup of tea. Often, mixed marriages work because the heterosexual partner, sex is not a priority. Love, companionship, co-parenting, and social standing are the priority, and sex is simply an option and or obligation. Ironically, those who would like to throw stones at someone else's marriage, especially those who've never stood in the shoes of a mixed orientation marriage, needs to consider the following. Sometimes people get married for the wrong reasons, and it has nothing to do with one partner being gay or afraid of being themselves. Marriages of all varieties fail and fall apart all the time. Get over it. Sexual orientation is perhaps the straw that broke the camel's back, but no one talks about all the other straws in a marriage that were also too heavy to carry. Love does conquer all, even a spouse being gay. You have the right to live your marriage your way just as much as someone else has the right to live a marriage their way. At the end of the day, the final word really is, there's 50 shades of gray to almost everything in life, even marriage. So let's go back through that article and let's see how you feel about it, Suzette. First of all, what's your overall view of this?
I think I swallowed my tongue after about the first or second sentence. I think I felt like I was choking on my tongue even then. Oh, my gosh. Where to begin? Oh, dear.
Well, let's start on his 5 points. Of whatever works, works. And that one says, just like being gay, bisexual, transgender, polyamorous, asexual, and all the rest of the spectrum of sexuality, if it works for a couple to have a mixed orientation marriage, then let it work. It's their marriage and their relationship. So how do you feel about that first one?
Well, if it works for them. But the thing is, I would say 99.9% of the time, it's not working for them. It's not working for them. I don't understand it. If you get married to someone and there is no attraction, what's the point? If you want to be with somebody else, then be with that somebody else. Why get married to one person and both of you agree in the marriage? Well, we're getting married because this is going to be a really good deal. That's like brokering a business deal.
Right. And if somebody knows up front, my issue is that he can't convince me that hundreds of thousands of women who he claims are living this life knew about this before they got married. This was not part of the deal. You know, I don't believe that 99% of women.
I don't believe that. And the other thing that I don't believe is just because you get married with one thing in mind, you know, and you think you know what it is you want or you think you'll be all right with it, you're not. If you ask most people whose relationships have failed, sex has something to do with it. People start telling you about troubles in their relationship, the one question you ask is, how is the sex? Because usually that's a very telling answer to that question. Well, we don't have it anymore. Oh, okay. I wrote an article not too long, well, it has been a while now, I think back in 2006 maybe, that said death of a marriage, the belief that sex is optional.
What did it say?
Death of a marriage, the belief that sex is optional.
That's correct. Now, I do want to, like I say, try to go into that a little bit because, as I mentioned, 99% of the women that I've worked with, you know, over the years, like over 100,000 of them, for the most part had no clue. I should say 95%. Maybe 3 or 4% knew the word gay before they got married, but they had no clue on what that meant. Because, you know, I had no clue. Look, you know, I'm not going to lie. I tell it like it is, you know, but people think they're stupid. You can only imagine how I feel. I suspected there may have been something in my ex-husband's past when we got married, but that didn't faze me because he was marrying me.
Exactly.
And I grew up in an age where sexual, sexual experimentation was like the deal of the day back in, you know, the days when I was growing up. So if somebody said they tried something and didn't like it, why would I question that? I would say, well, it's just part of that, you know, Kinsey stuff they talk about, or, you know, Masters and Johnson were always saying the men are experimenting. So, okay, he experimented, but guess what? He chose me because he's not gay, he's straight.
Exactly.
And even to go beyond my ex-husband, before my ex-husband, I was going with a man who I was a high school sweetheart of, back and forth. You know, it was always kind of a on-edge kind of relationship because he didn't have, like, the emotional attachment that I had for him, but he still wanted me. And we saw each other through high school, and then we drifted for a few years. And then we got back together after my first marriage failed, you know, before my gay husband. And when we got together, something always seemed off. But when I met him, he said to me, and this is in 1976, he said to me that, you know, I said, what have you been doing since I saw you? You know, it was about 4 or 5 years. And he had become a doctor. He was an oncologist. And I guess I was maybe 27 at the time. And he was the same age. We went to high school together. So he said, well, I've had 4 relationships. And I said, okay, what were the 4 relationships you've had? He said, 2 were men and 2 were women. He said, I thought, you know, I was attracted to men when I was younger. You know, so I thought I would try it out. But then after 2 guys, I realized this is not who I am. You know, I'm attracted to women. You know, I want a relationship with a woman. I'm straight. So we went together for a while. Something was always off, but gay didn't strike me. I was still living in that sexual experiment, you know, generation. And if he was loving me and telling me he wanted to be with me and that, you know, he's not gay and that's not who he is, who was I to say, what are you talking about? What did we know back then? We didn't know anything. And I get letters every day, Suzette, from women now who still don't understand this. They'll say, well, I knew he was gay when I married him. I don't get them that often. But, you know, he told me that if he married me, he loved me enough, he would never have to act on it. So I think we don't understand.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. True. Because I had something similar, as you know. I felt like, you know, the way he said it to me was that when he was younger, he experimented or he was involved in that life, but that God had delivered him of it, and, you know, he was in love with me and wanted to spend the rest of his life with me, so I believed him. I didn't have that kind of experimentation or, you know, I didn't date. I was in a very rigid and very safe, constrained environment. So I just thought sex was just, you know, sex. I didn't think there was an emotional attachment to it. I didn't know all of that about it. So, you know, then books that you read about men and the way they feel about sex versus the way women feel about it, I said to myself, if a man is just a drive, then I never thought of an emotional component. But I found out later, Very much so. So, you know, I think
a lot of it is that that's the most ridiculous thing to think that, you know, these mixed marriages that there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of them, and people are just happy living that way. I mean, people are not happy living that way. Sometimes they feel very stuck in these marriages. Sometimes they come from abusive homes where there's alcoholism, drugs, abuse, mental health issues. So, you know, you're going from the frying pan into another frying pan. I mean, you're frying one way, you're frying the other way, but it looks better. So this guy isn't beating you, and he's not physically punching you out or coming home drunk. So he's just, you know, not touching you, but what the heck, you know? Doesn't mean you're happy.
Yeah.
It means you're happier than you were before because you don't know any different. You don't know a normal. You're coming from the crazy into something that's also crazy.
Yeah, and then, too, Bonnie, one of the things that I'm sure you experienced just as I have, even if you're not in love with the person that you marry, even if you try to broker it like it, you know, you're going to be a power couple, or somebody tells you, well, you know, marry a good woman, and by good it means a doctor or a lawyer, you know, or marry a good man, and by good that means a doctor or a lawyer, or someone that looks successful on the outside. Even if you do those things, by virtue of the way marriage is, marriage requires things of you in order to be married. And if you're not in love with the other person, the demands of the relationship, the demands of the union, the demands of building something together are going to make you resent the other person if you're not in love with them. And that's something I found out from being married. So if you're not in love with that person and you're not attracted to them sexually, it's going to cause problems anyway, even if you made a deal because you weren't
right.
in love. There's demands when you start having children and you start buying property together and you're going to these couples types events and you're married and you're seeing other people happy with their spouses and they're talking about things that you don't even know because you don't have it in your marriage, but you find out you really want to have something real. You want to know what it feels like to be in love. You want to know what it feels like to come home and get in bed with somebody that you want to be with, that wants to be with you. You want to have that kind of affection and connection in a marriage. So after a while, it's going to unravel.
And I
after
agree.
While,
I mean, these men are not going to be able to keep performing sex. And like I say, it's a performance because they need it to get by to prove to themselves they're straight. But as they get older, it's going to be more difficult to do this. And they, you know, I hate when people say to me, well, as people get older, they don't have sex anyway, so what's the difference? There's a very big difference. At least they had it all those years to look back on and not feel inadequate that they weren't loved or wanted. I mean, things do happen when you get older. Men get all kinds of, you know, blood pressure, diabetes, every excuse you can use. But, you know, it's true. But they do have these little blue pills for straight men. They don't work with gay men because it doesn't make you want something you don't want to start with. You know, those little blue pills are really good if you want something and can't do it, not if you don't want it and you can't do it. So,
exactly.
You know, but you've built up the intimacy over the years, and you've had the sexual pleasure. And even though people do get divorced for other reasons, like I tell our women who hang on to these marriages much too long, more than other women do, I tell them 50% of all people get married and they get divorced and they don't have a gay husband. They just have a bad marriage. Why do you feel the need to hang in there and try to make something work that can never work and waste your whole life away? Do you agree with that?
I totally agree. And like I shared in some of the in our previous talks, you know, when you realize that you're becoming your best self, it's never going to be enough for that spouse. When I realize no matter how much more woman, no matter how much I become more comfortable in my feminine skin, no matter how much more wonderful I become, I'm still a woman and he doesn't want me. It's like no matter how you, you know, you can only grow, but within a certain frame of reference. And I realized no matter how much better I become as a woman, no matter how much of a better person, a better woman, a better lover, a better whatever, it doesn't matter. He's never going to want me. And when you realize that, after a while you start saying, why am I spending my time with somebody
well,
who's never going to want me?
Well, you know, let me just clarify that. He's never going to want you like a woman. He may
exactly.
want you like a sister. He may want you like a good friend. And he'll use you that way to stay out of trouble so he doesn't have to expose himself to the world that, you know, he's gay. But the
yeah.
fact remains that he'll never be what you need to make you happy, and you're going to spend your whole life trying to make him happy and trying to make him want you. You know, one of the things that bothers me the most is how women are willing to compromise themselves to make a man love them. And I know that straight, you know, relationships this happens to also. But it's so much more intensified when you have a gay husband, because I work with women who have literally spent thousands upon thousands of dollars changing their body, putting in breast implants, shrinking down their breasts, you know, getting, you know, breast operations to get smaller breasts, having, you know, liposuction. I know I have about 7 women in our group that I know of offhand who have gastric bypasses. Whatever it would take for them to look better to their husbands, to make them feel desired by their husbands, when nothing is going to work because they didn't know that the problem isn't them, it's their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look at all that women go through, and the nights they go crying to bed. Yeah, they're staying there, but they're not happy.
Mm-mm.
And even, I mean, I'm going to say that there are a small amount of women this could work for instance, I don't know if you agree with this, but let's say if a woman has been really traumatized by sexual abuse and she doesn't want to be touched. This could probably work, right?
Wow. Wow.
I mean, some women are brutalized. They don't want to have sex. Huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to get my brain around it, because even if she doesn't, it's a difference between wanting to have sex but wanting to feel like you're attractive. I think even
uh-huh.
if she has, you know, I think inherent in most women, you want to still feel attractive. You know, the reason why you get up and go get your hair fixed, the reason why you wear makeup, the reason why you choose certain outfits that look flattering, is because you want to feel attractive. So it's kind of hard for me to put my head around that you want to be married to somebody who doesn't find you attractive.
Well, I think it could work, let's say, if you're gay and the woman is gay, you know, a lesbian, that might work. Let's say they both want to cover the fact that they're gay, you know, and they can marry each other and be a public couple and then do their own thing on the side. But that's not what we're talking about. I mean, yeah, you're always going to find the exceptions. But those are the 1 or 2% out of 100% of people trapped in these marriages who don't want to be in these marriages, but they don't know how to get out because they're missing the puzzle piece of what's wrong in their marriage. They keep trying harder and harder to make something work that will never work, right?
Yeah, and then the thing about it, where I differ with Dr. or Mr. Collins, where I differ is, to me, when you were reading the article, all I kept thinking to myself was, you don't get it. You don't get it. This is not a mind over matter type of thing. This is not reasoning or, you know, philosophy 101. You're dealing with emotion. You're dealing with a spiritual type of connection, which you can't, it's more felt than telt. You know, you feel it. It's more felt than you telling me about it. And the whole time I'm thinking you're trying to make something emotional reasonable. And all it's showing me is that's the feeling we women have when you're with somebody who doesn't get it. They don't get the fact that having sex is more than the mechanics of it. When he said the difference between doggy style versus missionary position, we're not talking mechanics. Because you can doggy style with anybody. You can do missionary. A position is not gender specific. So you can't compare it to that kind of thing. I'm thinking you just don't get it. And to live with somebody that the subtleties and nuances of affection and love and passion and that magic and that spiritual energy that encompasses all that love is, to live with somebody who's constantly doesn't get it. They don't get what your sigh means. They don't get what that look in your eye means. It just goes right on past them. Why? Because they're not attracted to you.
I think you and I are really good examples, even though we're diverse as far as our age is concerned. You know, because I'm older than you. I'm a little bit older than you. But, I mean, the thing is that you just got married, and you waited many years to find, you know, a true love that could fulfill those needs for you. Mm-hmm. And you took it very seriously before you made that commitment. I mean, just jump in, or you didn't rush in. You really wanted to make sure that you were complete on all levels of the spectrum. That, you know, no two people agree on everything, or, you know, they're going to have arguments or not quite communicate 100% all the time. But all the values you were looking for were there. So you just got married. It took you a long time to, you know, really find someone, and I know you were kind of giving up hope for a while. But, you know, the love of your life did come along. I just celebrated 21 years with my boyfriend last week. We're not married, but we're like a couple in love, which is what I like. You know, I love the excitement and the passion and the romance. And I'm old, and he's much older. You know, he's a good 11 and a half years older than me. And yet you would never know it if you see us together, because we're very young at heart. We're young in body. We're still having a great sex life after 21 years on a regular basis. And it's not that it's so much only the sex. It's the fact that that's how we express our love for each other that way. And, you know, it's really important to us to have that kind of intimacy, so when things aren't going right, we still have each other in our memories to fall back on, because, you know, he's gone through some issues and illness, and so have I. But we have the history behind us, and we get back on track eventually. So we know what love is and what a woman needs, and we've both had it bad on the other end when we were married to gay men, where we had to feel like we're begging for sex, or that we weren't fulfilled, or that he was doing us a favor, or I was insulted that I'm a nymphomaniac, you know, no man is going to want me anyway. Anything to knock me down and shut me up, that's what I went through. And I know that you didn't have it that good either, right?
Not at all. And the thing that is interesting, because me and my now husband have had conversations about how we used to look at other people who, you know, were behaved in excessive loving ways, or they were always touching each other, always kissing, or they had that, oh, I'm thinking about this person, or they're talking about them all the time. And we used to be like, stick our finger down our throat, like, ugh. You know, it can't be like that. It can't be like that until it happened to us. And my thing is, when a person has really experienced what true love is, when they really, really have, then, you know, they can't write this kind of stuff. You know, I've never met this man, and I don't have anything against him. But to me, clearly, he has an experience, at least what I've experienced. I've experienced now what it feels like to really be in love, the kind of in love that has the maturity of taking my time, but the excitement of my youth, where we just love being together. I just love to feel him next to me, or a look, a glance, a brush against him, just being in the same room, just being in the same house. It's an energy, it's a feeling that unless you have really experienced it, you can very easily try to put it in a test tube and rationalize it. But when you've experienced, you realize there are no words. There are no words to really describe the kind of connection and the kind of intimacy and the kind of love and the kind of sense of fulfillment and wholeness and togetherness and validation and affirmation and all these wonderful things that are serious and committed, but also titillating and romantic. There's a magic to being in love. There's a magic between it that you can't just legitimize with a bunch of words. And so if people are settling, then it's because they've never experienced it. Because once you do, you can't go back. You just can't.
Well, I'll tell you what I think is dangerous about this. I mean, aside from the fact that, like we're saying, what you're missing out on because we know, what's dangerous about this kind of thinking, about the Mormon kind of thinking, and there's even another article that somebody sent me today. You know, I said, I'm not really gagging at this point, you know, after the whole week of getting these kinds of articles. This one's called The Sunday Conversation from the National NPR News.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's attracted to men, pastor feels called to marriage with a woman. In the Sunday Conversation Weekend Edition, Sunday brings listeners on unexpected side of news by talking with someone personally affected by the stories making headlines. Alan Edwards is the pastor of Kiske Valley Presbyterian Church in western Pennsylvania, a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America. He's attracted to men, but he considers acting on that attraction a sin. Accordingly, Edwards has chosen not to act on it. I think we all have part of our desires that we can choose not to act on, right? He said. So for me, it's not just that the religion was important to me, but communication with a God who loves me, who accepts me right where I am. Where he is now is married. He and his wife, Leanne Edwards, are joyfully expecting a baby in July. But let's start earlier in the mid-1990s when Alan was in high school, when he found himself thinking about boys more than girls. It was pretty immediate realization that it was a conflict in my faith, he said. He didn't understand how he could resolve his feelings and had little support from his friends. I didn't know anyone who was experienced in same-sex attraction, so I didn't talk about it much at all. But in a small Christian liberal arts college, he did start talking. My expectation was if I started talking to other guys about this, I'm going to get ostracized and lambasted. I actually had the exact opposite experience. I was received with a lot of love, grace, charity, some confusion, but openness to dialogue. Alan considered following a Christian denomination that accepts gay relationships, but his interpretation of the Bible wouldn't allow it, he says. I studied different methods of reading the scriptures, and it all came down to this. Jesus accepts the rest of the scripture as divine from God. So if Jesus is who he says he is, then we kind of have to believe what he believes. Alan first met Leanne when they both worked as teenagers in the Christian summer camp. I always joke with her that she was one of the cool kids and I was a raging fundamentalist nerd. They didn't click at the time, but in 2006, they both applied for the camp director job, and Leanne got it. When she was ready to leave the position, he took her to lunch to scope out the job. We got talking about the job and started talking about our experience of the last couple of years. I don't want to be gushy or romantic, but I just melted inside and I thought, this is someone who understands graciousness. This is someone who understands acceptance, and this is someone I want to spend as much time with as possible. He was drawn to her heart, her whole soul, he explains. Out of that birthed our intimate relationship. Leanne says she knew that Alan struggled against the sexual attraction to men. I wondered if he was going to be able to put something like that behind him or if it was going to be something that would affect our relationship, she says. But the way they see it, people in any marriage must work to resist attractions from outside relationships, whether from the same or opposite gender. There's always going to be situations where a partner is sexually attracted to someone else and isn't necessarily dealing with sexual attraction with their partner. Everyone has the experience of wanting something else or beyond what they have, Alan says. Everyone struggles with the disappointment, the discontentment. The difference, I think, is the blessing Leanne and I have experienced is that we came into our marriage relationship already knowing and talking about it. And I think that's a really powerful basis for intimacy. Alan says he does not identify as gay. I think I made a conscious choice along the way to say this is something I experience, but this isn't the thing that defines who I am personally. So, you know, it's just like more of the same, more of the same, you know. God's going to be able to let you do the right thing, and being gay is wrong.
The question becomes, but are you in love? You know, feeling grateful to someone, having overwhelming gratitude for someone treating you with regard or validation is completely different from being in love with them. And I would much rather, because I've been on both sides, and maybe, you know, sometimes people are only talking from the experiences they've had, because they don't know what it really feels like. And like I was saying, what I'm experiencing now, even in my puppy love, wasn't like this.
Uh-huh.
I've never experienced this level of love in my whole 55 years. So I didn't know any, I didn't have anything substantive to compare it with. I saw glimmers of it in the loving exchanges between people who had, I perceived that had that, and I longed for it, because you start really longing for it when you look at what you have and you see that you don't have that. You start really saying, gosh, I wish I had that. But as far as really knowing what it really feels like, I can't say I ever knew what it really felt like. But now that I know what it really feels like, it's very different. I realized some of the relationships that I was drawn to, it wasn't because I was in love. It was because I was in need of validation, and something inside of me was attracted to that person because I felt like that person could validate me or heal something, some trauma of my soul. I felt like they could heal something that bothered me or that made me feel less than. That somehow they could make me feel worthy or feel like I was enough. And sometimes that can feel just as insatiable as, quote-unquote, you know, passion. And so a lot of things that I thought were passion was just a heavy, intense dose of need. But when you've got a healthy relationship where you really are in love, that person, their character, their aura, everything about the two of you, there is genuine in-loveness between the two of you that has a substance, that's substantive. You can't go back to just settling. But I think, Bonnie, a lot of people don't know that that's what they're doing, because that's all they know. They haven't had anything else. They haven't experienced the other side of it.
And that's the problem. And that's what makes me so sad. You know, I was talking with this, you know, with one of our guests recently. But one of the things that makes me so sad is that, yes, people may be staying in these marriages, but the reality is that a lot of them are taking medication, they're taking antidepressants, they're taking sedatives, they're numbing their pain so they can remain in a situation. So, yeah, they're able to cope in it because they have all kinds of drugs going through their body. But I say that when you have to start taking drugs in order to cope with somebody in a marriage, then that, to me, is the real problem. When you have to change your mind patterns and numb your brain, because that's the only way you're going to be able to stay in the marriage? I don't think so. What do you think?
I totally agree with you. Why be in something that you've got to alter? You got to stop being who you are. You got to, basically what you're doing is you have to asphyxiate yourself to be in it. You have to cut off your breathing supply. You've got to numb yourself. You got to almost go into a semi-comatose state in order to be with them. And the thing about it is eventually it's going to catch up with you.
And also, what about, let's just try to talk about this for a few minutes. What message are we giving our children when we stay in these marriages?
Exactly.
Are we telling them, yeah, it's okay, because, you know, children do follow in the footsteps of their parents. And when they see that their parents were in loveless types of marriages where there was no physical touching, you know, they think this is what marriage is supposed to be about, and then they get into one and they're miserable just like their moms were.
Oh, yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I do, because even though my parents, I really believe in my heart that my dad was in love with my mom. I really believe that. I don't thought not one day that my dad was not in love with my mom. But yet, displays of affection were so foreign in our household. It was so foreign that even when I had a boyfriend and we held hands. I never forget one time we were in church, we were holding hands, and my mother was in the choir stand at the front of the church, and the whole time she kept making motions like, let go of his hand, let go of his hand, let go of his hand. And so then after church I asked, I said, Mama, what was wrong? She said, do you have to hold hands? I mean, do you have to do this stuff? So my parents were very uncomfortable with public displays.
Well, that's the way they grew up. Yeah, but they were growing up the same way. I'm sure your grandparents were like that.
Even though they bragged, not so much bragged, but even though they confessed to having a very rich sex life behind closed doors, it's just that, of course, we weren't privy to that. So the fact they modeled to us, though I colored outside the lines many times, it's amazing how what is familiar comes back to you when you get married. And so it's like, okay, so now I'm attracted to a man that does not display affection. So, and
because
I ended
that's what we think we're supposed to get, exactly.
You know, so it plays out in very subtle, in a subconscious way. It plays out in our lives in some way. We marry the environment or create the environment that we grew up in unless we clear that energy, unless we somehow see what's going on and work through this stuff to finding out.
And you were able
really
to do that, right? I mean, you took everything and turned it around.
Yes. I really believe that I'm very glad that life required it. I'm glad that something is, I mean, though I tried to do it the way that was modeled for me or tried to do it the way I was taught was the right way, whether it was by society or by what was modeled or by my church and its doctrine, though I tried to do all that, there was something inside of me that kept objecting, to me trying to fit into a box that wasn't my own. And I'm very grateful that life would not allow me to be content to just settle. Something inside of me said, there's got to be more to this. There's got to be more. And I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to spend my whole life not knowing what it feels like to really be loved. I can't rationalize that to myself. That would be my biggest regret if I were to die not knowing what it really felt like to really be loved.
I think we should start a new group called the Unsettlers. What do you think?
I like that. Yeah, the Unsettlers. We can't settle. We might have tried.
We will not settle. Right. We're not going to settle for something we don't deserve.
Can't do it.
We're going to only settle. We're never going to settle. We're always going to expect more. Like someone said in the commercial where it says, you know, expect more, you know, not or don't expect less. And I would say, no, I want to expect more. You know, if you settle for anything, you're never reaching your full potential. You're never able to self-actualize. You're never able to get that rainbow, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And even if it's not monetary reward, you feel emotionally you have such a reward when you have someone to love and someone who can love you back in the same way that you're loving him. Because that, to me, is what marriage was about. It's not about procreating, and it's not about a woman having to be subservient to a man. It's about two people loving each other enough that they can grow together, you know, meet the challenges, learn to bend, you know, learn to accept who each other is because, you know, something positive, and not having to go to bed at night crying like I used to do.
Yeah.
You know, and
a
lot of our women, they go to bed crying at night because they're so miserable.
Miserable.
But if they don't want to be miserable, I know where they can go to, Suzette, because you're a wonderful coach, right?
Indeed, indeed.
Yep, indeed. And even though you're married, you still have time for your coaching, correct?
Oh, yes, almost definitely.
Now that the honeymoon is behind you. Yeah, Suzette is a wonderful life coach. She will help you plan your life out, try to help you make the best decisions for yourself. And women cannot do this alone. You know, when you're going through all this turmoil and through all these things that are juggling your mind and you can't think straight, you know, having someone to turn to invest, you know, some time with is really the key to moving ahead. So, Suzette, how do people reach you now?
It's still the same. Even though I am changing my name, I'm going through the process of that. But my websites and so forth are the same. So it's still contact@SuzetteRHinton.com. So none of that has changed. My websites are the same.
And if you can't find it, then just, you know, write to me and ask me what is Suzette's, you know, email.
Indeed. Yes, I would be happy to be a guide to people because, you know, I feel like when you survive something that you and I have survived and have come out with at least the keys to joy, the keys to feeling alive again, I feel like if we're able to help someone else to tap back into who they are, because many times you've compromised who you are to the point that you need somebody to help you to reconnect with the things that bring you joy, the things that make you feel alive, the things that make you feel validated and that you matter, you know, getting back to you. And I think that's very key, especially when you have been in situations where you've had to deny who you are for so long. You need help in putting it all back together again. The pieces are all there. You're still all there, but everything is jumbled up. So you need somebody to help you to put the pieces back together again. And I would be happy to be that agent of transformation and change. So, yeah.
And people who work with Suzette tell me that it's the most wonderful experience. Unlike therapy, it doesn't have to go on forever. It's to help you get on track from where you are right now. You don't deal with your past, and you're not going through, you know, your childhood. You're going through where you are at this moment and how to get out of it, how you can get unstuck, how you can move on to your next step. Because unfortunately, the tragedy that so many of our women have is that they do get stuck and they don't know how to move ahead because they're living in such misery that they can't even think ahead. So sometimes some people, you know, go to counseling. Other people don't know where to begin with counseling. But coaching is an excellent alternative because you're dealing with the present moment, how you feel about it, how to get past that feeling so that you can move on and feel better. Would you say that pretty much summarizes it?
I think so, and this is a point of encouragement for people that are listening. You know, I know so many times we try to numb our pain, but if you're not the 1% or 2%, but you are part of the percentage of women that are unhappy being in your current situation, I know it may be hard to imagine this, but just know that just being able to feel dissatisfaction with the way things are means that there is possibility for you to change.
So those are our last words of wisdom.
Yes.
And
yes.
Suzette, I want to thank you so much. I want to know, how do you pronounce your new name? I didn't want to introduce you to it until I knew how to pronounce it correctly.
Vernon.
I had a feeling it was going to be like that. Instead of Vernon. Do people call you Vernon?
Well, some people
say that?
Vernon. I love the Vernon part. It sounds more powerful.
Well, I thought that rear is spelled R-E-A-R, and so V or V-E-A-R. So I was going to say Vernon, but I thought, maybe I'm wrong, so I'll let you say it first.
Yeah, it's V-E-A-R-N-O-N, so it's Vernon. So.
Vernon, right.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, welcome here. You're a whole new person now.
Yes.
Mrs. Suzette Vernon, right?
Yes,
and congratulations on your wonderful marriage. Thank Robert for letting me take up your time so that you can share the good word to thousands of women who are listening to you. And I hope you have a wonderful month, and we're going to be looking forward to having you back next month at the beginning of the month. And thank you so much, Suzette. You know I love you.
I love you.
Before
too
we go, can we just tell them about, let's just talk to them about your books also. I just, believe it or not, I bought an extra copy of your book for a friend of mine that I gave it to her just today. I said, this book is going to change the emotional G-spot. I said, this book is going to change your life because she's going through a really hard time right now, and her self-esteem is on the floor. So I said, you know what, she always makes these bad choices. I said, you're going to have to read this book. I said, I'm going to buy you a copy for yourself because I have to keep mine. And I said that, and I read yours a lot for just for inspiration sometimes. And so I gave it to her today, and she says, well, what's it about? I said, it's about you making better choices in your life. So she likes those kinds of books, so hopefully it'll help her. But you can go. Suzette has several books out right now. Her first one was Sound of My Soul. Is that right?
It was The Sound of My Life was the first one.
Sound of My Life, I'm sorry. And the second one was?
The Sound of My Soul.
I was close.
And protecting your emotional G-spot. Those are basically written at the very same time and launched.
Yeah,
the very
they're
same.
All great books. I've read them all, but the emotional G-spot is really great for women who don't understand why they keep making the wrong choices. And I think so many of us go through that. You know, after our gay husbands, we rush into other relationships that are just as destructive in other ways. So by understanding this, you'll understand it, and they can find your books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever, you know, books are sold online. And
that's
if you're
right.
lucky enough to live in North Carolina, you can go to some of the bookshops and find them, but most people don't live there. So they can go online and find under Suzette Hinton. The name of the books on the books are not changing, so it's H-I-N-T-O-N. And if you want to know more, then just contact me always. All right, Suzette, thank you so much. You know I love you.
Oh, I love you, too. Happy New Year, my friend.
Same
Happy
to
New
you.
Year.
I'm waiting for you and Robert to come north to visit your son so you can see me.
Well, actually, it's amazing because my son is getting married, but they're not getting married up north. They're getting married in this area, but I'm still going to make
bad,
it,
bad,
Bonnie.
Bad, 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 bad. When are they getting married? When is your son getting married?
In November.
Well, you have plenty of time to come up and visit them one time before they get married.
That's true, but I definitely want it to be a little bit warmer before I come up, that's for sure.
That's fine. You can wait till the spring because Philadelphia's right on your way to New York, and I'll take you and Robert out for your wedding dinner. How's that?
Oh, that would be so sweet.
Right, so that's another reason to come.
Another reason.
All right, well, ladies, have a wonderful week. I'll be back next week with another great show on our Straight Wives Talk Show. If you need me, just write to me at Bonkaye, B-O-N-K-A-Y-E, at AOL.com. Suzette, I love you.
Love you, girl.
All right, take care, everybody. Good night.
Good night.